The first time I was asked to speak and tell my story, I was sitting out in the car park, scared to death. I'm still scared to death. But that time I didn't know whether I should do or not. And I was sitting in the car, praying, looking for guidance. And I flipped open my Bible. And it was a new one. The ones with the pictures in. Guess what I saw? Jesus' words are all in red in this Bible. And the one verse on that page in red said, "Do not be afraid, but speak and do not be silent. For I am with you and no man can attack you or harm you." Well, what could I do? I had to go in. I was amongst friends anyway. I'll tell you just a little bit about my background. I was brought up on the edge of a mill town on the Yorkshire Moors. Went to a little church school. My family was nominally Christian, but it was never discussed at home. And I knew of God because I went regularly to church. But I didn't know God. I was learning about him, but not learning to know him. Halfway through my teens, I thought I had great ideals. I was going to be a missionary, I was going to do this and I was going to do that. But then I forgot about him when I got a bit older. And while still in my teens, I met a young man and got married and started to learn a few of the facts of life. Like someone else, I got pregnant very, very quickly. 9 months later, I had one baby, and a few months later, I had another. And I was in a situation where I was terribly poor, very unhappy, and socially isolated. I didn't like to go out to church anymore because the church that I went to, this was sort of didn't like babies crying, and I had no money to put in the box, and I was very self-conscious. Then guess what happened? Sorry. A knock on the door one Wednesday morning. I opened the door and there's this nice, neatly dressed lady, and she said to me, "Good morning, I'm taking part in a home missionary work. Now, we're offering a free home Bible study to anyone who's interested." Well, was I interested? I nearly grabbed her in the door and brought her in, sat her down, and we started a home Bible study. Do you know who I'm talking about? Yes, it was a Jehovah's Witness. I didn't know. I'd never even heard of Jehovah's Witnesses, would you believe? But the study continued, and I opened my Bible. I'd read it before, but suddenly it seemed to open up things that I'd never heard of. And not having enough knowledge, it all sounded wonderful. If anybody comes and tells you something that sounds too good to be true, it often is, and in this case it was. But still I swallowed it hook, line and sinker, and I thought, I'm going to hang on now. My marriage was very, very unhappy and crumbling. But from that time on, I worked harder and harder to try and make it work. And I thought, now all it needs is for my husband to learn the truth, as we called it. And my life would be perfect. I was happily knocking on doors myself by this time, witnessing to people about the good things that are going to happen on the earth. Jesus Christ is going to bring his kingdom here. All the miseries of the earth are going to be finished, etc., etc. You've probably all heard it all. At that stage, I had 3 children, and we came out to Australia. And with the break of associations from old friends and family in England, it was a complete break into the witnesses, both for my husband and myself. And we were totally isolated from any outside contact. This is manoeuvred anyway. When you're join the witnesses to tell you to witness like mad to everybody, and the ones who are on your side will stay with you, and the ones who aren't, you don't want to know. So you do actually become isolated. But still, I was happy. I was on a high. I thought it was wonderful. God cared. There wasn't a hopeless situation in the world because God could handle it. And it was all going to end tomorrow. This was back in 1967. Unfortunately, at that stage, when my husband did come in, I started to see the politics within the organization. We know what politics are in an organization like that. Everybody's scrambling for the top. They're organization people. And I started to see the flaws, and when I started to see the flaws, I started to look more carefully. And I asked the elders in the congregation questions, and they said, read your Bible more, pray more, write witnessing more. And so I did. But do you know what happens if you put your watchtower aside and you start just reading this? You start to learn the real truth. And oh boy, was I in trouble. Because I kept saying, but this says, and this says, and this says, you can be born again. You must be born again. Not just a few, but all. Now that's heresy. You're not allowed to say that. Unfortunately, over the period of years, I'd seen these things happening, and they crumbled my faith in an organization. But since the organization is equated with being God, you begin to think you are actually doubting not just men, but God himself. And James says that anyone who's wavering in their faith cannot please God. And so I lost confidence in myself. I was wrong. I was interpreting the Bible wrong. How could I know more than these other people? How presumptuous. And my whole life started to crumble. You know, Jesus warned about a house built on sand. I stopped trying in my family life as much. I was afraid to read the Bible in the end, and my prayers seemed to be an empty echo. I watched my girls grow up, and I saw them face the miseries that the Jehovah's Witness children face at school. They can't join in this and they can't join in that. It's not so bad if you believe it, but to see your children go through that when you're doubting it is very hard. All this came to a head in 1 year, in 1980. My marriage eventually broke up. As much my fault as anybody's. My husband immediately shot through overseas, and I was left in a financial difficult situation with three girls, one of whom was a full-time preacher of the Witnesses and didn't live at home. The oldest girl was... We could talk freely, and she had the same doubts that I did. We talked about Jesus Christ, and we talked about the things that were wrong in the organization. And the other one was too young to be able to discuss things freely. And then the biggest drastic thing of all happened. I thought I'd come to the end of my line. There I was, on my own, feeling wrecked with guilt. With two girls. And another knock came to the door, but this time it was a policeman. Your daughter's had an accident. She's in the Nambour Hospital. I rang up the Nambour Hospital and said, I'm sorry, she's been taken down to Brisbane. I was living in Mooloolaba at the time. She's seriously ill. She may not make it. You may not see her. At that time, the daughter who was in the accident was taking driving lessons with the man who is now my husband, believe it or not. But at that time, he was just someone we knew, and he was a friend of Margaret's. And she was due to have a driving lesson. And I rang him to say, look, she won't be there. Told him what had happened. Unfortunately for me, he came around. I didn't have to look to any witnesses. I didn't want to. They came around. He came around, picked up my other girls, and we shot down to Brisbane. Margaret was still alive. When I walked into that ward, her face lit up. Ah, Mum's here. She couldn't speak very well, you see. She'd been injured in her chest. She said, I couldn't make them understand, Mum. I mustn't have blood. I cannot describe the anguish of that. She trusted me not to let them give her blood. The doctors trusted me to let them give her blood. And my daughter was lying, dying. And the scriptures that I'd had drummed into my head, the legalistic scriptures that misinterpreted God's love, said that if she had blood, she would lose her everlasting life. And that echoed round and round in my mind. She went through surgery and slowly deteriorated, getting septicemia, and she died after 2 weeks. The funeral was 3 days later. I don't think I've told this before. I was at the funeral, and my now husband was there too. He wasn't even sitting near us, but he was there. And the elders tapped me on the shoulder and said, we're going to have a committee meeting with you as to why that man was at the hospital and why he's here at the funeral. They did drag me off and I did go. I don't know now why I did go, but I went off and they warned me what was going to happen to me. I never went back. The black hole that I went into is hard to describe. I prayed. But I was so low that I couldn't hear God's answers. I'm sure he was with me. I'm sure he was carrying me along. I had to make some way of living, so I went down to Sydney and found a job and made a start. I had a busy job, a responsible one. And you've got to live, right? You've got to keep a smiling face on for the people. But that smile was just a mask. And inside there was this emptiness. My family life was crushed. My daughter was dead. My other daughters were terribly unhappy and mixed up. This went on for a while. I was just walking in limbo, trying not to disturb any more, because I knew if I said anything about the organisation, I would lose the other two girls as well. And that is what happened eventually. So then I had none. But on the plus side, I got to know Kel and we got married, and he had a family, a very loving Christian family. I now have 5 grandchildren by that family. And they were just like my own, the replacement of my family, if you can say such a thing. My other two daughters, I think Estelle's expecting me to say the bet with me. I'm sorry, Estelle, it's not that good. I went to America to a convention of ex-witnesses. There were more people there who had been involved deeply in the witness organization than there are here today. People do leave the witness. And we prayed that day for all our families, that they all can maybe not be reunited to us, but at least reunited in the Lord. And I know that God is faithful and that my children are in his care. I might not be able to do anything, but surely some Christian can speak to those daughters of mine and to any other witness people that come to you. They can see the love of Christ and know that there is something better. what they think they have is the truth is another truth. Paul said to the Galatians, I'm astonished at you that you left the real truth that you had and gone back to the law. This is what these people have done. They've gone back, they're under it worse than any Jewish law. It's harsh, it's demanding, it's pushing. And we need to care for those people because they're all locked in a cave and they're afraid to come out. They're afraid because they think that there are no real Christians out here. They think that when they knock on the doors and people say, I'm not interested, they think they're not, nobody's interested in God or the Bible. They're hungry, but they think what they've got is the truth and that's all they're going to get. They don't realise that what the real truth brings peace. It took me some time to learn that. We'd already been left Sydney and gone up to Yeppoon. Sorry if I lose track of time, it was about 1983. And I got in contact with a lady who had also been a witness, and I got some tapes from her of others who'd left the organisation. And I learned that I wasn't alone. We all think we're alone, don't we? But it never is the case. And I lay down on my lounge room floor and I listened to these tapes. And I cried, and I laughed, and I prayed, and I surrendered to God. And I said, Jesus, my life is yours, please pick it up. And he did. It's not been a miraculous thing where I suddenly was filled with fire and brimstone, no. But I felt the healing hand of God. I can think about my daughter now with sadness, pain, but with hope. I can think about my other daughters and their families with assurance. I know they're in God's care. I know there are people praying for them everywhere. So God is kind. There aren't many people who can take such a devious track as I have. We're talking about name meanings yesterday. My name, Sheila, means blind. How blind can you be? But hopefully my eyes have been opened now. And God can bring you up from the depths. And I can say now my smile is genuine. I'm happy. I'm content. And I hope to be able to, in some small way, give back to Jesus what he's given to me. Thank you.